Welcome to TNT's Hit Songs from Mars, where we unravel the stories behind some of pop's most unlikely hits.
From simple curiosities to songs that changed the world, we examine the socio-political and cultural factors that contributed to the success of these surprising outliers.
And the impact these songs had on society. I'm Tom Thompson.
And I'm Tyler Ralston. And together we're
TNT.
Heidi-hee, heidi-ho!
I don't know how to respond to that. Hello. I'll just go with a hi, hello. Hi, so, hello, bonjour.
So Canadian of you. You even covered French Canada. I'm touched. I'm honestly touched.
How's
so you're
going,
at the new
man?
Cabin. I'm okay.
I am at the cabin. I had a what was seemingly a glorious day working from the cabin, but I didn't leave my computer until 10 minutes ago. I was glued to it. Didn't really have a lunch. So we're going to make this quick and snappy, and then I'm going to go for a beautiful bike ride.
All right. I'm sure everyone's just weeping tears of sympathy for your,
plight.
Yeah. And here I was I was feeling sorry for children with cancer, but after that, after that tale of woe, I realized how selfish I've been.
I know. It's a rough lot. Someone's got to do it.
Yeah, it's a rough lot indeed.
Also, my beautiful little hummingbirds are back. Been watching them. They actually started fighting over the sugar water that I leave them now.
These are the ones in your head?
No, Tyler. Literally.
Oh, like real hummingbirds.
Do you have hummingbirds in
your
neck of the woods?
Absolutely. We got lots of stuff. Now, we don't have a feeder. There's a lot, surprising amount of bird life on the little lake I live on, including a bald eagle that returns quite a bit.
Ooh,
and cool. That thing's impressive. And we also had, first time I've seen this, a Canadian goose couple laid eggs on a stump.
Oh.
And the male guarded the stump while this female sat on it. And they had four Canadian geese. Goslings.
Huh.
And those little buggers, like every day they're like twice as big as the day before.
Oh yeah, they're cute. They're so furry.
I mean, that was like day one. No, they're not cute and furry anymore.
Oh yeah, they go through a really awkward phase just like teenagers do.
And they're just turning into shitting machines just like the rest of them. Yeah. But they're cute.
What do we call them? In Canada we call them like death cobras or something.
Death cobras. Yeah.
Something. No, that's not quite right. Maybe one of our listeners will correct me. Something like cobra, because they're actually really aggressive. We have so many of them here, obviously. And weirdly, they congregate like right on the bike paths and stuff like that. And they will attack you.
Well, I'm guessing the cobra references to mongoose and goose. That must be where the connection is, because the mongoose attacks the cobra. Remember Ricky Tikki Tavi and all that?
Yeah, yeah.
I'm guessing that's his. Oh, just to give you a little colorful vignette on that, and this is so touching. It should be for our Canadian listeners. That eagle I was talking about, the first time I saw it, I mean, that thing's wings are like, you know, 4 or 5 feet in diameter. It's impressive. Mm-hmm. He was looking for lunch, and mm-hmm. all the other birds on the lake. I mean, the ducks on the lake were diving for their lives.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that thing was serious, and they were serious to get out of its way.
I know exactly where you're going with this story.
Yeah, but
the geese were fearless.
Well, they weren't fearless. Okay, they went after the geese, and they were scared.
Okay.
But finally, the eagle kind of sized them up, like, I don't want none of that. That's too big.
Yeah,
but they were scared.
Yeah, I remember one of our cats taking on a goose once, and that was not pretty.
I think those necks have like, you know, like a baseball bat force coming at you.
Yeah, there's a lot of hate in those little birds.
Yeah, they're impressive things. I mean, we don't have too many of them, but more and more. For some reason, I think this family is like here for life. They're not going to bother to go back to Canada.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, I don't know. And we got herons. It's an impressive little lake for as unimpressive a little lake that it is.
Herons are always impressive when you see them, especially in flight.
Curiously enough, our heron, our resident heron's been named. Its name is Rumi, by the locals, you know, named after the Persian poet from the 5th century or whatever. Wow. People call him Rumi, and I have no idea. I do have an idea where it originated, but...
Aren't you a cultured lot?
Well, of course. This is Eastern Kentucky, after all, Mr. Thompson.
Indeed. Things are so crazy right now, Ty. I'm so busy on so many levels. I've just been approved for a bunch of work travel.
Okay.
Prince Edward Island to present at a conference. So that'll be cool. I haven't been there since I was a kid.
Awesome.
It's a beautiful place in Toronto. Not as rare, but that's going to be kind of neat. We're actually going to be recording our former governor general speaking about the library that they have in their residence, and they're actually donating it to Library and Archives Canada.
All right.
So they're going to talk about what the books in there and why they thought those were important to keep.
Sounds gripping.
Ty. I'm going to quietly strangle you.
No, I'm sure for a certain audience that that's the people are going to be on the edge of their seat for that entire lecture.
By the edge of seat, you might be surprised, Ty. Yes, her husband, John Ralston Saul, is a very recognized.
I know the name. I've got his book. One of them.
There you go. He actually did when Library and Archives Canada came together. I don't want to talk too much about work, but it used to be the National Library and the National Archives, and then at one point we came together. And actually, John Ralston Saul did the keynote speech when we had our getting together retreat or whatever it was. And I have to say, it was one of the most inspiring speeches I've ever heard in my life, specifically about the work that we do and the importance of it. So it might be gripping, Ty.
That jerk. Or you are easily amused. One of the two.
Oh, geez. Well, I'm laughing at your joke, so clearly I am easily amused.
Touché. No, actually, I mean, John Ralston Saul, aside from the cool middle name, seems like a pretty cool guy. No relation, as far as I know, or like distant or anything like that. But I know the Ralstons did come through Canada before they went to the U.S.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, we're talking 1800s or whatever.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Too cold for you.
Well, we smartened up is what we did.
Another thing I'm doing, I'm returning to my I play music at yoga sessions sometimes. I'm doing that for the first time in a long time. It's pretty neat. Sonic yoga.
Yeah, interesting.
Do you ever do yoga? You're a yoga guy?
I do not. I've never done yoga, but I've determined I need to now.
Yeah.
It's just my 51-year-old body can't keep up like it once did.
Mm-hmm. And the flexibility. It's actually, I mean, I don't do it, to be honest, full disclosure, but I certainly appreciate the benefits of it.
I also remember I had a friend and grad student. He was Indian, and his dad was a yoga instructor in India. And I guess he was just saying how much his dad hated how yoga has become this sort of exercise thing, as opposed to just all elements of spirituality removed from it, except for like the new agey kind where just pick and choose whatever you want from it.
Yeah. I think there's a documentary kind of about this called, I think it's called Yoga Inc. And they kind of talk about how it's just turned into a big business. And now there's like yoga competitions and everything. Like, I don't know. It seems to be very distorted from its origins.
Acro yoga, which is, have you seen that?
No, but I've heard about like goat yoga and
goat yoga. That's got to be just Canada.
Yoga with
man.
Goats. I think we can probably outweird you on the yoga front.
I'm not. There's some things.
I feel that like I just stole your thunder.
Well, there are some things that are best left just unsaid. Goat yoga. Yeah,
fair. Look it up.
It's
a thing.
That's one of the things you can't unsee. So, maybe I'll just leave that one alone.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I feel like before we drift into any more ridiculous conversations, we should probably move to our hit song from Mars for the day.
Yes, I think we should. Before you say something you're going to regret and get yourself fired or God knows what. All right. You ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. And just to preface, I did give Tom a little bit of homework on this one. So he has probably a sense of something about where the song is coming from. But beyond that, let's just take it from there. So we'll talk about the homework, which was a film, a movie that probably everyone in our generation has seen at one time or another. And this will complement the song in a very big way. So without further ado, here we go.
Okay. Yeah, classic. Oh, completely forgotten about this song.
Totally.
And Steve was like, so bitchin'. There's like the Galleria.
Wow, Ty, that's really, I haven't thought about that song in probably 20, 30 years.
Yeah, fair enough. It's a forgotten hit.
Yeah.
But I'm going to, in this podcast, posit that its influence was far bigger than the song ever was. It opened a door. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see that.
All right. So curiously enough, you don't know who sings it. That's kind of funny.
Yeah.
And you probably would never guess it in a million years if you don't know already. Frank Zappa.
Oh, what?
Frank Zappa. And the girl's voice is his 14-year-old daughter, Moon Unit Zappa, doing the Valley Girl talk.
I don't know if I ever knew that.
And fair enough. Probably when the song came out, when you were what, you know, in the, you know, 10 years old or whatever, you wouldn't have the slightest idea who Frank Zappa was, so the name wouldn't have resonated.
True. But this is fascinating to me because then it kind of explains how Frank Zappa probably just like carved out a whole niche for himself. I mean, I'm guessing he made a lot of money on this song. And
he did.
Yeah.
Okay. But that's we'll get there. That's a big part of the whole discussion.
Yeah.
It's his only hit. It's his only top 40 hit.
Okay, well, I was going to say, that's so crazy.
Right.
I had no idea.
I think in Europe he might have had some top 40 hits, but at least in US and Canada, it's his only hit. Let me give you the numbers here. Went to number 32 in the US, and it went higher in Canada, went all the way to number 18.
Hmm.
So it really resonated with Canadians for some odd reason, which I'll get to that too. But anyway, yeah, the song was a hit. It was an offhand song that he wrote. He didn't intend it to be a hit. And it was one of those cases where he resented the fact that it became a hit. It was never intended to be a hit.
Right. Crying himself all the way to the bank.
Yeah. Frank Zappa, again, let's just put it like this, is a complex figure.
Indeed.
Okay. He never made any music that was intentionally mainstream, but yet he resented not being in the mainstream. Okay. Again, according to, well, go figure. Again, it's these, you know, 3-hour jazz fusion bits interspersed with funny if you're stoned kind of, monologues and stuff. That's not going to be a top 40 hit.
New Mexico, a couple of the guys in the band who shall go nameless because their girlfriends might find out, decided they were going to work the wall on these girls from the college. So one night, it was the first night when they were still trying to get it in there, you know what I mean? The skinny girl, she says to one of the guys in the band, she says, well, to several of the guys in the band and one of the t-shirt guys too, hey, let's go.
And this is according to his daughter, Moon, who's, you know, talked extensively about this song as she is the vocalist on it, or the girl, the Valley Girl. So yeah, he got a ton of money for this song, even though it was a modest hit. You can't say it's an all-time hit, but it was a modest hit, at least in terms of the charts. But it's the only song he had any success. It did bring a ton of money into the Zappa bank account.
Right.
And
for all kinds of weirdness.
Yeah. And it's one of those cases where the more money that goes into this household, the weirder it becomes. I don't think Zappa was faking any of his weirdness. Okay. One of the theories on this song for me is that It was, it might have actually done better as a pop song had it not been so heavy. It's a pretty heavy rocker for 1982, at least in terms of like, you know, radio play. It, I mean, that thing rocks. I mean, that bass is like distorted to the max, if you
will. Right. I question that, but I can't say I can back it up, but I would think there'd be heavy stuff on it. Like, I mean, Zeppelin would have been on the radio.
No, I'm talking not on the radio. They didn't have much radio play.
I guess. Yeah.
Like, think 1982, like the heavy songs you're going to hear, like Eye of the Tiger. Which is, you know, it's a rocker, but it's not, it's, this is almost metal.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, the way the bass, it's, I mean, it's really pretty heavy.
Yeah, true.
And that's just a theory. I mean, we may be in, you know, maybe you'll come up with 20 songs that are heavy in the top 40. Or, you know, it was sort of a minimalist moment too, like I Love Rock and Roll, Jack and Diane. So it just a little out of sync with the out of sync era. But it's also in that classic era we talked about the last podcast of, you know, that 82, 83 Perseids shower window. But what I'm going to go with here, it's not so much the hit song, but let's go back to our lead-in. Its cultural influence is huge. It was huge. And I'm going to posit it was even bigger than I think anyone even realized. Okay. I mean,
well, wouldn't, so sorry, just to insert something here. Didn't the whole like thing, isn't that coming from this era? And it's to this day, it's a scourge, which I use as well. and it's just such a part of our vocabulary, unfortunately.
I think, yeah, I had this in my notes. Like is, of all the vowel talk, now vowel speak, whatever you want to call it, like permeated the language. It's in there.
Still does.
I do it too.
Yeah.
It's, you know, to as instead of a pause or to make a quote, I was like,
I would pay money if I could erase that from my vocabulary. I would pay someone money to have that erased.
You could just practice and
I guess so. What do? You get someone to smack you every time you say it?
Yeah. There you go. Well, I know my dad, I remember, was he hasn't done that for years, but he at one point basically said, you know, stop saying like, because it was getting on his nerves. Mm-hmm. And okay, now I'll go ahead and just spill the beans here. Well, no, let me save those beans for a little bit later. Okay,
but yeah, save your beans.
Yeah, I'll save my beans for now. But like, yeah, indeed, like is one of the things that permeated. But it goes much more than that. Okay. By the way, was that the song? Did you have a guess to wager based on the movie?
Oh yeah, no, I never would have thought that was going to be the song.
That's true, because you said, "Oh, I hadn't thought about it in 30
yeah,
years."
Yeah, no, not at all.
Let's reveal to our audience the movie that I asked you to listen to or to watch. yeah, I hope you just didn't listen to it.
I watched as well. It would have been probably better to turn off my ears, not my eyes.
Well, I had some questions I needed you to answer about this movie. Okay. Right now, but we'll get to it. Right. The movie, of course, was Fast Times at Ridgemont High, which, by the way, there's a Ridgemont High in Ottawa, just so you know.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Ridgemont High.
Yeah, when I was doing research on this, I was like, oh, that's funny.
That's funny.
In the Ottawa-Carleton general area, wherever the hell is.
That's,
I'm sure.
It does ring a bell.
Well, you probably drive home past it every time.
Yeah, I probably do.
Yeah. But so you'll probably see it 10 times now that you've, in the next week. So, this is the reason I asked you to watch that movie for a couple of reasons. First of all, they came out at practically the same time.
Okay.
Valley Girl came out June 1982, and Fast Times at Ridgemont High came out August, same year. Okay. So they are practically, in terms of, you know, at least the long durée look at, you know, they came out at the same time. It was just one at the beginning of summer, one at the end of summer of 82. Yeah. And the 1-2 punch of these was the blueprint for teens for the next decade and beyond. And I'll explain that as I go forward, what's going on. I mean, everyone imitated the surfer dude talk of Spicoli. That was a big thing.
Still to this day.
Yeah.
It's funny because, we talk about Valley Girl, but that Spicoli, like that character, like everyone, dude, someone says something you don't agree with. Dude, come on. I mean, that goes back to that, I think.
I think you're absolutely right. So this movie and this song, the song will be kind of forgotten about, the movie less so. Mm-hmm. In fact, I think I should have double checked this, but I think the Library of Congress of the United States recognized Fast Times at Ridgemont High as one of their, one of the ones they put in storage as artistically, aesthetically, or culturally significant. Obviously, in this case, it was artistic, the artistic significance of it.
Obviously.
Yeah. I mean, that was a work of. No, I mean, what'd you think of the movie? Have you seen it before?
So for sure I'd seen it before.
For sure.
I mean, I can't guarantee I watched the whole thing before, but I'm pretty sure I have at least once watched the whole thing and then maybe caught bits and pieces here and there. The part that really struck me about it was like really not like a complete lack of any kind of cohesive plot.
The movie,
like, I mean, it's kind of there, but it's more like a lifestyle movie.
It's vignettes, and it's kind of the same story repeated with three or four different characters that are loosely connected to one another.
Yeah.
Honestly, the movie has some real pluses, but honestly, it's a piece of crap. I mean, as far as a movie goes, it's really not a good movie.
Yeah.
It's culturally significant, and I will stand by that as defend my Library of Congress here. It is culturally significant. It had a big impact. And of course, on the stars of film for the next two decades, they're all in it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You notice a young Nick Cage?
Oh. Did I miss? I missed that.
It's quick, and you'd have
to. Okay, he was just a little short appearance.
For me, I didn't either. At first, I was like, oh, that guy's familiar, but it's Nicolas Cage. So again, it's a who's who of the next two decades. And of course, Nicolas Cage just recently did Renfield.
Hi, are you here for the meeting? Well, come on.
No! No!
Some call me the Dark One. Others, the Lord of Death. To most, I am Dracula.
Okay, obviously we're dealing with a little bit more than just narcissism here.
Yeah.
A lot of these people are still active.
What's her name? Jennifer Jason Leigh, is that her name? She it's funny because she looks so different to me as a kid. I kind of recognized her, but she ended up, I don't know, so different. I was shocked. Phoebe Cates, that she kind of always looked the same, and
right, and she she'll be a perennial in 80s movies, like she retired early from the film industry.
Okay, that doesn't surprise me. Yeah,
yeah,
I haven't seen much in ages.
Right, but so anyway, let me do a little bit of background here. A couple of things. First of all, just speaking of the Phoebe Cates. The movie, obviously, when most people saw it, you saw it in the theater, or most people saw it on VHS. The Phoebe Cates coming out of the pool part was the most paused film of all time.
Okay. The most paused scene, yeah.
Because you would rent the movie, and that scene would come, it'd be all blurry because so many people paused
it. It's worn out.
Yeah, they wore out the tape. And this has been widely recognized. All you're going to see is like moving pixels anyway, But it's one of the most paused moments in film history.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. So that's just one little trivial thing about it.
I was kind of surprised by the nudity, to tell you the truth. I didn't remember that about it.
Were you offended?
I was not offended, but I was just a little surprised.
Yeah, they didn't pull a lot of punches, and the sex scenes, while they didn't show penetration or anything like that, were pretty graphic.
Mm-hmm.
There, you know, it was clear what they were doing, and it wasn't, I mean, the trick for the last 20 years has been, you know, just kind of do a shot of the girl's back in some mm-hmm. way or another. And you get the mm-hmm. idea, but you know, they didn't pull any punches there.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, if you watch the preview, it's like, that's what it was all about. You're going to see some TNA okay. in this movie.
Right.
Universal Pictures presents everything you always wanted to do in high school with everyone you always wanted to do it with.
Hey, bud, let's party.
They're the students of Ridgemont High.
And of course, you know, and every teen who's under 18 is going to find a way to sneak in or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
The old trick was you get a ticket to one movie and then you sneak into the next theater.
Yeah, that was one. And of course the theaters are on to that one, but that's yeah. definitely one. In fact, I was in a situation where they counted heads and the usher's like, one of you two doesn't belong here and made one of us go to the other theater. It's weird.
Oh wow.
And it wasn't Fast Times from Ridgemont High or anything like that. Right. Let me just back up a little bit. For our mm-hmm. uninitiated, we need to do a little bit of background, okay?
Sure.
So Valley Girl, what does Valley refer to? Is an important question. And for those familiar with Val talk and all that, it's the San Fernando Valley region of Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. Which is essentially a giant suburban community kind of to the north in the northwest of the city. And of course, a whole bunch of other suburbs that are also part of this valley.
Mm-hmm.
So that became that's the valley. And so the Valley Girls are talking about the San Fernando Valley, which everyone from that region or from LA just calls it the valley. And there's no mm-hmm. question about it. But it's also the epicenter of world entertainment. Hollywood, at least part of Hollywood, North Hollywood is part of the valley. If Hollywood is basically right there on the border.
Right.
And it's also, and it was for decades, it was the porn capital of the world. San Fernando Valley.
Until Montreal knocked it off.
Until the internet knocked it off and, okay. and ran it out of business.
I thought that Montreal kind of became the hotbed.
If you will. I hadn't heard that. I know. I think the one they said it's Bucharest or somewhere in East Europe.
Okay.
But the industry is not what it used to be in San Fernando Valley because basically free online stuff has crushed the industry.
Mm-hmm.
But during the heyday, say 70s to the 90s. 90% of all legal porn was made in the San Fernando Valley. In fact, the nickname in the era was called Silicon Valley as opposed to Silicon. Yeah, exactly.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's fun.
Yeah. So it's a suburb of Los Angeles on the one hand, or what would you call it? A sleeper community or whatever. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, it's the center of world entertainment. And these two things come together in this movie. And this song, okay.
Mm-hmm.
So let's go back to the song now. Frank Zappa, okay, legendary. If you can say nothing else about Frank Zappa, he did it his way.
I would say legendary weirdo.
Yeah, and somehow was always part of the scene. For example, Deep Purple reference him in "Smoke on the Water." Did you know that?
What's the lyric?
Frank Zappa and the Mothers are at the best place around. Some stupid with a flare gun burn the place to the ground. Smoke on the water, fire in the sky. So he's always around. And he's mm-hmm. always, and he's got his, obviously his cult following, and you know, he always did well up until his death. He was still touring, up until a short time before his death. He somehow pulled off the impossible. The kind of music that he does found an audience big enough to not only sustain him, but make him a very wealthy man. And Valley Girl probably doubled his wealth. It'd be my guess.
Yeah.
but he resented the song. He apologized for it at live shows. He's like, sorry, I never meant to have a hit. He's like, when you make music as long as I have, sooner or later, you're going to do something somebody likes. And so,
wait, hold on a second.
Okay.
He apologized before playing it at shows, or just he wasn't playing it. He would just acknowledge, I wish I'd never written that song or whatever.
Good question.
Not play it.
And I don't know. That's a good question.
I mean, that would be pretty weird to then play it.
Well, then it'd be perfect in line with Frank Zappa, you know?
So I may be beating you to the punch here, but what was his motivation?
You beat me to the punch by one punch. I was just getting to that. Okay, so Frank Zappa lives, he doesn't live in the San Fernando Valley. He hated it.
Okay.
And that's why he wrote the song. He's like, God, these people are disgusting, materialist, shallow, and just hated being there.
Yeah, what in your estimation, what is the Valley about, Frank?
Well, you see, I don't want to break the hearts of a lot of people who really like this record, because I hate the San Fernando Valley. I mean, it's perhaps one of the most disgusting places on the face of the earth. And I wrote this song about the values of the people in the San Fernando Valley. Uh-huh. But it turned out to be cute, and so everybody thinks it's cute. Okay, it's a nice, cute record. Now for
people, the problem was, it was near where he lived. Okay, you'll love where he lived. It was Laurel Canyon.
Okay. Oh, beautiful.
Yeah, so, you know, I can, just for our listeners out there, Tom is getting visions of 12-string electric guitars going through exactly. his head at this moment.
Oh, my God.
The Laurel Joni Canyon Mitchell sound.
The birds. Yeah, exactly.
Live in Laurel Canyon, but he had a mansion way, way up in the Hollywood Hills. So to say he lived in Laurel Canyon's almost not quite right. He had a mansion that was like the next neighbor was a several minute drive away. He had that much land and, you know, he had a lot of money. In fact, I just in preparing for this podcast, I looked up his house. You know, needless to say, it's a castle. And it's unique, and it last sold for $5 million. Okay.
Okay.
No surprise. So he lived up there, and in the San Fernando Valley, he hated it. He absolutely hated having to be down there, having to see the people. So he wrote this song as a scathing critique, okay, of the materialism of the San Fernando Valley. Okay, that's part one of the story. Part two of the story is his daughter Moon. Okay, very interesting woman. Very non-pretentious, very down to earth. And I guess apparently Zappa was too, believe it or not, in his sort of day to day.
I believe that.
Yeah. So here's the issue. Frank Zappa had four children. She was the oldest. And at the time of when this song was written and recorded, she was 13 or 14, somewhere in that range. And, you know, she basically said, you know, having Frank Zappa as a father, you know, she couldn't really compare it too well to other people because it was the experience she knew, but she knew it wasn't normal. Mm-hmm. And she said he was great fun. Like, just for example, she describes her household as among other things, oversexed. Okay. Like, for example, there was a giant porch painting of an orgy scene on the walls. And there's, you know, there's little kids running around. She said there were copies of Hustler and Wee lying around everywhere, that kind of thing. She would hear what went on in bedrooms and stuff like that. And she's like, you know, most 8, 9, 10-year-olds aren't facing those kind of issues.
Yeah.
So she describes her household as oversexed. so I'm sure among a lot of other things, but her biggest issue, she said, you know, Frank was great fun. He was, you know, he's always improvising with the kids and having a great time, but he was basically never around. When he was present, he was great, but he was never there. Mm-hmm. If he wasn't touring for 8 months a year, he was home, but he slept all day and recorded all night. So they never saw him. And apparently the kids knew better than to knock on the studio door when he's in it. So she's like, she wants her dad. Even when he's around, he's not around. So what she did, precocious young woman, you know, young girl, really, she's, you know, 13 at the time that she was, mm-hmm. she wrote a note. She says, dear Mr. Zappa, I am interested in entering into a collaborative project with you, recording project. Please contact my manager if you are interested. You know, this kind of, it meant to be funny note, slid it under the studio door. And then that was that.
Right.
Nothing came of it. But then suddenly, 3 a.m., many months later, knock, knock, knock on her bedroom door on a school night. And Frank's like, come on, we're recording. So she got what she wanted. So she got up and they did Valley Girl.
Okay.
And so what he did, they sat down and she's like, okay. Like, apparently she would make, you know, make fun of, let me back up a little bit. There's a little more backstory. She doesn't identify as a Valley Girl because she wasn't. She lived in the, you know, this mansion on the hills. And mm-hmm. most of her, you know, her childhood friends' experiences are people coming to the Zappa house. Everyone came there. She didn't go that many places.
Right.
So when she went into the valley, which she went to school, by the way, in San Fernando Valley, it's like she's landing on Mars. and she would marvel at the way, you know, at you know, preppy collars and you know, shoes with no socks. And she was just amazed by it all. She was so alien to it, even though she was kind of a part of it. And she would go be invited to parties and things like that. But okay, make no mistake about it. The parties and the school she attended to and her social circles were of privilege. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So very wealthy circles. And like, if you look at the name of her school, Oakwood, whatever it was, private school mm-hmm. in San Fernando Valley, it's like famous alums, you know, and big list, including her. And so what Frank did in the studio session is like, apparently when he made fun of the way they talked in the valley, it made him laugh. So she's like, okay. So they went through all these improvisation scenarios. Okay. How would this person react to this? And she's basically hamming it up because she's making him laugh. Mm-hmm. But she didn't really call it Val talk. She referred to it as surfer dude talk, among other things. They're clearly influenced. The Val talk was influenced by surfer dude talk. Tubular. That's a surfer expression. It's a wave. Yep. It's a tube. Totally. You know, good tubes. Totally. Tubular. Yeah. So she's wanting to make dad, you know, happy, and she's finally working with him. And so she's laying it on thick. He's howling and recording it, and they record all night. And then
it's kind of sweet. The idea that, you know, I never see my dad. The only way I'm going to see him is if we collaborate on a musical. I mean, it's sad, but it's also kind of sweet that she was smart enough to be like, oh, if I actually want to hang out with my dad and get him laughing and stuff, this is going to be the only way to do it. It's pretty clever for a young kid.
She's obviously a very bright, clever person.
Yeah.
And like, if you watch, like, remember the show Solid Gold?
Of course.
You know, the wedgie outfits the dancers wore and everything.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Tom remembers. Oh yeah. I saw the look in his face there. She did this song on Solid Gold. Okay, you know, as it became a hit.
Some of today's teenage girls have a way of communicating which is all their own. Our next guest, along with her father, Frank Zappa, has put some of that jargon to music and produced a rather unique record. Tonight she's going to sing that Solid Gold hit called Valley Girl. Please welcome Miss Moon Zappa.
And she was 14 years old at the time. You'd never guess she was 14. I mean, she's clearly 14 going on 30.
Okay.
You know, one of those kind of things. Okay, and for reasons I just, you know, the way she was brought up, she was kind of had to be savvy early on about certain things. And she, to be fair, also, she seems to be a natural at it kind of being present, showbiz present. Yeah. And she'll go on to do movies and things like that. The one that comes to mind is National Lampoon's European Vacation. She was Rusty's California girl they met in Italy.
Oh, right. Okay.
And, you know, the catchphrase of that one is Rusty asks her, do you want to scar some grimace proportions? And she says, sure. Okay. And she did a good job in that very tiny role. But okay, back to the song. So she's trying to please dad and succeeding, and they record the song, and then it becomes Valley Girl. Okay.
Yeah.
So what I'm going to pause it here is, and the reason I asked you to watch the movie. Now, let me talk about Fast Times from Ridgemont High a little bit here.
Okay.
Fast Times at Ridgemont High is also basically about the valley. Okay. Mm-hmm. Much of the filming was done in the valley. Okay. Mm-hmm. It's about these LA, in this case, the students weren't wealthy. They were all kind of working folks to a certain extent. But nevertheless, public school kids, and they're in the valley. And in fact, the mall scenes, which you saw, the external ones, I don't know what that was, but the internal was the Galleria. So the song in the movie overlap in terms of the Galleria mall culture of the 80s. Hmm. So the movies overlap with the San Fernando Valley. Okay. Mm-hmm. Here's my question for you. Okay. Obviously, they showcase Spicoli's surfer dude talk, and Sean Penn did an amazing job with that. I mean, he was an archetypal role.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Did you hear any Valley Girl talk in that movie at any point?
Hmm.
They were recorded. The two projects were in the works at the same time. They came out at the same time. Did you hear anyone talking like a Valley Girl?
I not that I can recall.
I watched it last night myself. The closest I could come is when they're making fun of a group of cheerleaders and they're trying to get the spirits up, but nobody talks like that. Okay. So here's my working hypothesis. And this is a big one. Okay. I may be really I would never, publish this as a historian or anything. This would be just the beginning of the project. I'm going to say that basically Frank and Moon Zappa invented it. Okay. Mm. Not that it didn't exist, but they basically created it to the extent that it became.
Huh.
For example, she's trying to make Dad laugh, so she lays it on super thick.
Right.
So the people she's imitating, she's doing it like 10 times what they do.
The weird thing is, though, that this is like a – what's the phrase about life imitates art? You know, people even now, like – you know, like I went to the store, like, and I'm going to like do this. And then like, it is that exaggerated. Like, that's not an exaggeration. You know?
Right. Except for my question is, did that exist before the movie and the song?
Yeah. Yeah. No, you know, I realized that. I just mean the exaggeration, like, she was doing. The exaggeration she was doing it's now like that. You know, even if it was a mild version of it at the time and then she was exaggerating, it's now like that's what I was saying. It's now like what she was doing. Right. And so I think it does support your argument.
I think so. Okay, so I'm going to challenge our listeners. Show me some Val Girl talk prior to June 1982 in some cultural, some song, some cultural event, something. Because I'm going to argue that it really didn't exist, at least in that extent. So let me go a little further with this. So she's in her very wealthy circles and imitating the way people talk. And so it did exist. I'm not going to say that it didn't exist, but it existed in a much more minor form. They're imitating surfer dude talk and stuff like that. But after the song came out, it was a sensation. Books appeared, How to Talk Like a Valley Girl. I remember
people wanted to then.
Yes.
It is 9 minutes before nine. Teenage girls often seem to have their own language, and what you've just heard is one version of it. That was rock star Frank Zappa and his 14-year-old daughter, Moon Unit, on the hit record Valley Girl. Now, the song parodies the lingo of girls in California's San Fernando Valley. But what began as a spoof has kind of become a teenage craze. Kids everywhere are starting to talk and dress like the Valley Girls.
Interesting.
It was everywhere. There were like, courses on it. There were contests. There were contests of Val Girl speak within months. And Frank Zappa, after the fact, was absolutely furious. He's like, all that should have been coming. All that revenue should have been coming to me. But it's like, Frank, you're denying the hit. You should have gotten on the stick, buddy, and copyrighted it. Because Moon Zappa, and I have no reason to doubt her, she says she invented half of those phrases, like Grody to the Max. She says she invented that night. That and Gag Me with a Spoon were the two catchphrases of Val Girl talk. She basically, so Frank Zappa and his hatred for this culture perpetuated it worldwide.
Oh man.
It's the lab release of Val Girl Contagion. How about that? And it's all Frank Zappa's fault.
All right, Frank, I'll bring you into this at this point because you're the one that took this, what you were hearing your daughter say all the time, and you put it into a song. How do you feel now that something that was started as a spoof has really kind of taken off and that all these other teenagers around the country are imitating these girls?
Well, let me tell you how far it's gone. We've reached the point of cultural pollution now. I have a relative who works in a bank. There are two Iranian girls who work in the bank. They've been here just a short time, and now these Iranian girls are saying, "Oh my God," and "bag your face."
And it's all your fault.
It's not my fault at all. I was doing my job as a reporter. All I did was...
That is fascinating. I would like you to confront him with that at some point.
Well, let's get a Ouija board. How about that? It's going to be a little tough, but I'm willing. You want to do Ouija on here? We'll get in touch.
Or his kids. So he has four kids, you said?
Correct.
You know, Dweezil is one, right?
Dweezil's the second one, and there's two more. Ahmed is the third, and then there's a fourth. I can't even remember her name. And they're all sort of low-level in the entertaining world.
Well, Dweezil, he's a guitar player, is he not?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So
you played at Blues Fest with him, didn't you?
No, I didn't.
Okay.
This isn't about Tom, Ty.
Oh.
I do end up seeing his videos often on YouTube because he has some kind of a show where he interviews people about gear or something, like kind of like iconic guitar players, I think. And he kind of jams with them. He's a really good guitar player.
He's a good guitar player, for among other things. His dad, he was. If you listen to Frank Zappa from the beginning, he wasn't that good in the beginning. He got really good.
Mm-hmm.
But also, he brought in people that were superb. Steve Vai got his start with Frank Zappa. And like, if you look at the liner notes of, you know, Personnel, you know, Frank Zappa, Steve Vai usually says something like, "Impossible guitar runs." So Dweezil got lessons from people like Steve Vai hanging around.
Right.
And Eddie Van Halen too.
Mm-hmm.
So he apparently, he had a little in there, let's just say.
Yeah, it seems like it.
they're all in showbiz to, you know, pretty minor degrees, really.
And did Moon, she was in a bunch of films or... Just a handful.
I think she still acts, but the only one that I would recognize would be, you know, National Lampoon's European Vacation.
Mm-hmm.
But she periodically acts, she writes and things like that. You know, there was a memoir about, you know, growing up in the Zappa household, which I'm sure sold some copies and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was one of these cases where the mom died and the inheritance was not equally divided. So with very public... screaming matches and lawsuits and all of that.
Yeah.
Same old thing for, you know, showbiz kids.
When did Zappa die?
It was 93.
Oh, wow. That long ago.
Yeah. It's almost 30 years. It was December of 93.
Wow.
And that was sort of out of the blue. Everyone was like, what? Didn't know he was sick, but he was.
Hmm.
Yeah, and apparently, go ahead.
He probably hit it.
Yeah. And apparently among his, you know, his last request to his wife, it's like, get out of showbiz, just get out of the industry, take the money and run.
Yeah.
So,
I have a question.
Go ahead.
So obviously you're saying that Valley Girl didn't exist before this, but what about,
or to a lesser extent,
or like Valley Dude, like the Valley Dude, like the, or that's just Surfer Dude, like the Spicoli character. Is that,
I'm guessing.
That's a surfer stuff, right? It seems like.
And I don't know to what extent, the same extent that Spicoli and Sean Penn, his character, is exaggerating that.
Mm-hmm.
Probably to a large degree.
I'd like you to meet this young man. His name, Jeff Spicoli. And Jeff, congratulations to you. Things look kind of rough out there today.
Well, I'll tell you, Stu, I did battle some humongous waves. But, just like I told the guy on ABC, danger is my business.
a lot of people expected maybe.
But, everyone's doing Val talk and surfer dude talk. By the way, apparently the surfer dudes hated the Val talk and hated the fact they borrowed slang expressions from them.
Yeah.
But, everyone's got books and all of that on Val talk. But, with surfer dude talk, is it the same question? It's a good question.
Yeah. Sean Penn, wow, he's had quite a career, eh?
Yeah.
From that role. Was that like his first role or just a very early role?
If it wasn't his first, it was pretty close.
Okay. I mean, he went on to do some just incredible work.
He really hit pay dirt with that role. I mean, it's iconic, and he's lucky he got away from it. I mean, so many people do an iconic yes. role, and he's Spicoli forever.
Yeah.
Or John true. Bender from The Breakfast Club. Judd Nelson never escaped that role.
What are we having? Just your standard regular lunch, I guess. Milk? Soup. Oh, that's apple juice. I can read. PB&J with the crusts cut off. Well, Brian, this is a very nutritious lunch. All the food groups are represented.
The biggest one of all time would, of course, be Tim Curry and Frankenfurter from the Rocky Horror Picture Show. You can't yeah. see Tim Curry without seeing Frankenfurter. You just can't.
Don't get strung out by the way I look. Don't judge a book by its cover. I'm not much of a man by the light of day, but by night I'm one hell of a lover. I'm just a sweet transvestite. From transsexual Transylvania.
And then the guy, the guy who was the All-American Burger guy.
His name? Judge Reinhold.
Okay. He had a lot of roles after that, too, right?
He was a staple character actor for the 1980s.
Yeah.
He always did the same basic approach, but it was a different persona. He could be the lovable dork. He could be the dickhead boss like he was in Gremlins.
Right.
But it's always kind of the same thing. He was in Beverly Hills Cop as sort of this nitwit cop that Eddie Murphy had to protect. And
yeah, it's almost like an awkwardly earnest archetype or something like that.
And it worked for him. Yeah.
It does work.
Yeah. And this one I thought he did a good job in this one too. He was kind of the main character. Like he was probably on screen. He and the sister who, Jennifer Jason Leigh, played his sister in the movie.
Mm-hmm. What she went on to, I mean, in some ways, I guess Penn and her she might be actually the biggest star from that movie. Don't you think?
Probably Nicolas Cage.
God. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of them became true legends. Another one, of course, was the surfer or stoner friend number one, Eric Holtz. I think that's his name.
Oh, yeah, 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 yeah.
He was the star that never was. You ever notice that?
He was pretty good. Good actor. I can't think of the role. Like, what was the role? He was kind of good at the super creepy. I wish I could remember what role it was. It was like kind of like a James Spader type role, like one of those movies where he's kind of like a weird jerk guy or something. I wish I could remember what it was, but
Eric Stoltz, I think I mispronounced his name.
Yeah,
but I'll tell you my favorite role of his. Of course he did Mask, but that's not going to help his career because you can't recognize him. In fact, during the cast party, the guards wouldn't let him in because they didn't recognize him.
Oh man!
But he did the heroin dealer in Pulp Fiction.
Oh yeah,
and he nailed it.
That might be what I'm thinking of, actually.
Yeah, he nailed that role.
That was really good.
I mean, yeah, he played that to the utmost. That was beautifully done.
This is Panda from Mexico. Very good stuff. And that's Bava. Different, but equally good. And that is Choco from the Harz Mountains of Germany. Now, the first two are the same. 300 a gram. Those are friend prices. But this one is a little more expensive. This is 500 a gram. But when you shoot it, you will know where that extra money went.
I have a little story that's completely unrelated to all of this.
Go for it.
Well, not exactly. I remember, did you hear the band Buffalo Tom?
No.
They're from the States. I think they're from like Boston area. They're kind of like one of those like three-piece power pop kind of bands. And I really love them. And actually, one of my fondest memories was working at the Folklore Center and my roommate called me up. And he said, I'm picking you up at 5:30. We're going to Montreal to see Buffalo Tom, like out of the blue. I had no idea we were going. And I didn't even know they were playing. And I thought that was so awesome that he did that. My friend Ash sometimes listens to this podcast, I think. That was like such an exciting trip. But the funny part about it was that apparently they kind of played this like pretty heavy, like it wasn't, you know, it was like that weird intersection of grunge and kind of like power pop where, you know, there's just like a little bit of grunginess, like, yeah, maybe. Yeah. Much better, but they looked really normal. Like they just looked like kind of like almost like preppy kids or whatever. They just had short haircuts and stuff like that. And when they were playing at a pretty big club in Montreal, and they're a pretty big band in that era, I guess it would have been like early 90s. The guy at the door almost didn't let them in because the same thing.
They didn't fit the profile. Hey.
They'd be like, okay, $15. And they're like, oh no, we're in the band. And he's like, no.
Yeah, you are.
So I thought that was pretty funny. And you know, they did actually, I remember seeing like, it was so funny. I remember seeing, they were in some kind of a spread in a, you know, like a fashion spread or something. Like that's the kind of, so it was interesting, but they're a great band. You should check them out.
On the flip side of that, I've at least on two occasions, I didn't have to pay to get into a place because the people thought I was in the band back when I had long hair and everything
else.
Look
at you.
Yeah.
Rockstar material.
So, okay. Well, anything else on Valley Girl or Fast Time to Ridgemont High?
Well, I want to say, I don't think this song, unless it's getting played in movies, you never hear this song anymore.
Nope.
Right. I mean, it was huge at the time, but wow, it has not survived. It's not a horrible song.
No, it's kind of a good song.
But it just, for whatever reason, it would never be on the radio.
It's true. I can't remember ever hearing it on the radio.
Yeah.
But it would have been at the time. It's true to a certain extent. I mean, if it made it to solid gold, it's being played on the radio.
Oh, yeah. No, of course. Yeah. I mean, to be that big a hit, you have to be from that era. I'm frankly shocked that it's Frank Zappa. That's such a shocker to me. I had no idea.
And you know, he was shocked that he had this smash hit, not smash hit, but a big hit on his hands. But but again, with more cultural impact, the song's forgotten, but served as a catalyst. To continue with that Val thing. And once Moon Zappa told Val people how to talk, my working hypothesis, they started to talk like that, which you mentioned a little earlier. Mm-hmm. And then it's just for the next 5 years, it was endlessly Val talk and then various versions of, you know, the dits. you know, the movie Clueless mm-hmm. is another good example. Mm-hmm. It just keeps coming back. I mean, it's, thanks, Frank. It's the gift that keeps on giving.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing that I find surprising about this whole story is that that people wanted to sound like that because it's been a negative thing for the past, well, I don't know, 30 years, it seems like.
Well, right. And it's, it's just suddenly, you know, the blueprint was there for how teens are supposed to act. Like if you're from, you know, mountain mm-hmm. Western Maryland and you hear this song and then you watch the movie Fast Times, oh, this is what they're doing in California. This is what, how I'm going to be. And you, mm-hmm. you know, like, for example, I didn't see Fast Times at Ridgemont High for years, but I was influenced by it. And then I wore Vans, the checkerboard shoes.
Oh. right. Well, that's, yeah.
Here's wow. And I was one of the first to do it. And mm-hmm. I wasn't going to mention this story, but I guess I will since it came up. There's like a weird tragic twist in all of this. Let me just tell the story briefly. Mm-hmm. So I was this dorky fourth grader or whatever, and I bought Vans thinking I was the coolest thing on the planet mm-hmm. and walked to school every day. Found out years later, two guys who were kind of out and about, perhaps going to school themselves, saw me, didn't like it, didn't like the fact that I thought I was so cool, and were planning to jump me and beat me up.
Oh, wow.
These two guys became some of my best friends in high school. But at the time, they thought they were going to beat me up. They told me that years later.
Okay. What stopped them?
I don't know. I'm glad because...
You just lucked out.
It might have just been more talk, but one of them had a fighting streak. Mm-hmm. And I saw him get into fights, and it was scary. You would not want to be on the business end of that.
Right.
So he ended up being a prison guard. Okay.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah. So I was fortunate. I was just a skinny little kid, nerdy kid. Yeah. So years later they told me that. But the other one, it was actually the other guy who was not a fighter. He was not mainstream in any way. He just kind of grew up on the wrong side of the tracks and all of this. And at one point, yeah, he and his family went to California trying to make a go of it. They came back, you know, fell on their face and all of that. They didn't have a lot of money or anything else. As an adult, he went to California and he was in his mid-30s and he was making a go of it there. He had some kids and stuff like that. And he got into an altercation. Like there was some traffic incident. And so he pulls into a 7-Eleven and two cars pull in behind him. They start shouting and he starts arguing back. One thing led to another. He was stabbed in the chest and died.
Oh,
right in the 7-Eleven, right in the San Fernando Valley, about three blocks from the Galleria.
Oh,
and whoa. So the story take in my personal life takes a bit of a tragic turn. And then as far as I know, the murder was never resolved. They jumped. They're described as an Armenian street gang. They jumped in their cars and they drove away.
Wow.
Yeah. So there's a full twist on the whole California teen, you know, this is, and it didn't work out so well, obviously, for him.
Way to like totally shit on the vibe, Ty. Like, oh my God, gag me with a spoon.
Oh, just on that note, apparently, okay, the way they talk, oh my God, mm-hmm. that's called upspeak. Okay. Mm-hmm. And it happens naturally in various parts of the English speaking world. One of mm-hmm. them is Ontario, Canada.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Where you guys, every sentence, you don't do it so much, but every sentence is, every declarative sentence sounds like a question.
Yeah, that is very common. And I didn't realize it was just in these parts, but that's very, I can't even do it. Yeah, I don't really do that. But even statements are, there's an up inflection, which you think it makes it sound like a question, even though it isn't.
When the A was very much, you know, you guys said A every other word, that was the same thing, A?
A? Yeah, for sure. Oh, that's A? For sure.
You brought it up.
Yeah.
So it's
that's interesting. Just Ontario?
Well, Southern Ontario to be specific. And,
oh, wow.
And that's then, but it's true. I mean, you guys talk like that. And it's also Scottish English. And there's a natural connection there. There's so many descendants of Scots in Southern Ontario.
Yeah, that's fascinating.
But I guess when Val Talk came out, a lot of linguists were just furious. It's like, oh my God, this is going to make the problem so much worse in Ontario, because it's a natural hotbed for that kind of talk. So Fast Times at Etobicoke CI, baby. Any final words?
Like, this is a totally good choice, Ty. I like
gnarly totally, dude.
Totally gnarly, and I commend you, like, totally on this episode. You surprised me, like, at least three times.
Bitchin'.
And actually, I just want to say that the gnarly appeared in my conversation with a guy about putting tires on my bike yesterday. It's like, yeah, you should be okay with these as long as you don't do any gnarly turns.
It happened to me recently. I had some kind of skin problem. I can't remember. Like, the doctor, like, this is about a year or two ago. Oh, that's pretty gnarly.
It's from a medical professional.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
So it's a good word. Gnarly. Let's bring back gnarly.
I don't think it went anywhere.
It hung out. Yeah. The word existed before. So they picked up on that.
It's a good word.
It is a good word. So we got to work it into every episode somehow.
Agreed.
All right.
Oh, gnarly.
Okay. Do you remember how I said that I had a couple questions about the movie I wanted to ask you? One of them I've already asked. It was, of course, did you hear Val talk throughout the movie? I have another question that I want to ask, and I want you to be brutally honest here. Did you hit pause at the Phoebe Cates pool scene?
Not to my knowledge.
Not to your knowledge. Okay. Good non-committal response.
What do you say in the U.S.? I'm pleading the fifth.
Okay, there you go. There you go.
Thanks for tuning in to TNT's Hit Songs from Mars. We hope you enjoyed yourself and learned a few things along the way.
For a complete list of songs you heard in this episode, visit us at hsfm.buzzsprout.com. We hope you'll support the artists we featured by purchasing their music.
If you liked this episode, please subscribe to the podcast and you'll receive new episodes as soon as they become available. While you're at it, if you could give us a rating or review wherever you get your podcasts, that would really help us out. We would like to thank The Reverb Syndicate for providing the theme song for our podcast. They have an extensive catalog of tunes just as rockin' as the one you hear here.
Here, here.
You can find them at thereverbsyndicate.ca and on Facebook, SoundCloud, and Bandcamp, which typically pays artists the most. We would also like to thank Eric Minot for designing our podcast icon. You can find his design and illustration work on Instagram at MinoGraphics. That's MinoGraphx. You can connect with us on Twitter at Songs from Mars and at hsfm.buzzsprout.com.
Feel free to disagree, praise, correct, and chastise us.
We would also love to hear your idea of a hit song from Mars and why you think it fits the mold. Even better, if you felt like recording a voice memo and sending it our way, you can email us at hitsongsfrommars@gmail.com. We may even feature it on the show. Until next time, Earthlings.